This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
So, it's opening day, and many of you are really into that. It's night one of the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament with four games. Many of you are into that, like all four games, and how it relates to your bracket, etc. And then there is the Maryland situation where they are one of the teams playing in the Sweet 16 tonight. For the first time in 9 years, by the way, the biggest game Maryland basketball's had in nearly a decade, and a total S-storm surrounds the game because the head coach appears to be ready to leave the moment the season ends. Good morning, everybody. Bob Carpenter will join us at 10:35. We'll talk opening day and we'll talk 2025 Nats with Bob Carpenter, who is set to call his final season as the Nats play-by-play voice. Ben Fox from Yahoo Sports, he's a sports gambling guy. He'll join us at 11:35. And Chris Harry from FloridaGators.com will join us at 12:35. So, Denton, I want to start with this because I was thinking about this morning, in part because of a conversation I had with somebody last night who had no clue as to what I was talking about when I said, you know, are you following the S-storm at Maryland surrounding this game? This person's not a big, you know, college basketball guy. He knows I am, but he was not, you know, in that same bubble. And I want, and it reminded me that, you know, as sports fans, we all have our interests. We all believe, especially because of social media, I believe more so than anything else, that our interests are everybody else's because we get wrapped up into these bubbles of people who are interested in the same thing. You know, I've got to remind myself sometimes that other than the football team in our market, you know, which has a true mass following, you know, and by extension, the NFL, which has a mass following, everything else is niche. It really is compared to, you know, any story about the football team is a story that you don't have to go into great detail in terms of communicating, you know, what's going on. Most people know. Everything else, even though Maryland basketball is super important to me, but in talking about it on this show, you know, I've got to remind myself that I've got to communicate to many of you what the hell I'm talking about, the specifics of it, because it's niche. It's nook and cranny compared to football. So is opening day. I know many of you couldn't care less about what's happening at Maryland. You're dialed into Mackenzie Gore and James Wood and Dylan Cruz at 4:05 today at Nats Park. The Caps play tonight in Minnesota. In many ways, the Ovechkin chase of Gretzky is more than just niche, nook and cranny. You know, it's got more something close, you know, to mass appeal. I say that because I'm going to spend a lot of my time on this show, and we're going to take calls today on just how absolutely out of control nuts the Maryland situation has become around a game tonight to go to the Elite Eight. The game has become secondary to the situation involving the head coach. But I need to explain to many of you what that situation is. I'm not here telling you that I'm going to shove all this Maryland stuff down your throat because I know how many of you, you know, how all of you care and how all of you are into it. It's not. And I say that in part also just to remind people, like at Maryland, they're niche. Maryland basketball, as big as it has been over the years at times, we're a different sports town. We are a pro sports town now, much more so than we were when Gary was the coach, much more so than even when Turgeon was the coach and last took the team to the Sweet 16. You know, when they played Kansas in the Sweet 16 in 2016, it was like the 10th highest rated sports broadcast in the DMV for that season. The other nine things were Redskin games. I don't know that that'll be the case tonight. It's a different town. We're going to talk opening day with Bob Carpenter in about 30 minutes, but I'm going to start with Maryland, and I'm going to start by making sure that everybody understands what I'm talking about. So Maryland basketball just completed its most successful regular season and so far the most successful March run it's had in 9 years. Now, the regular season actually was comparable to a season they had in 2020, but I'm not going to bore you with those details. The excitement for Maryland basketball from, you know, a fan base that had kind of gone dormant a little bit has been renewed. It's been resuscitated. And there's a lot of excitement about the Maryland basketball program. Again, nothing, you know, comparative to the interest in our football team. Still a fraction of what that is. But real excitement. We are a basketball town at our core in terms of the number of people involved in basketball that participate, play, coach, ref, etc. And we know that basketball at every level has always been important. And I would imagine that more people have jumped on the bandwagon here over the last, you know, couple of weeks anyway. Last week, you know, beating Grand Canyon and having that thrilling finish against Colorado State on Sunday. And for those of you that don't know, Maryland won two games in the first round and in the second round of the NCAA tournament last weekend in Seattle, with the second win, the second round win, being a legendary game for the program. And it will be a game that will be remembered just by college basketball fans in general, because it was a very good game, but not just because of that, and actually not even remotely just because of that, but because of the way it ended. A freshman by the name of Derek Queen, who had one of the best seasons for any freshman in the country, probably the second best, if not the best, freshman season of all time at Maryland, hit a game-winning shot at the buzzer to beat Colorado State to move Maryland into the Sweet 16 for the first time in 9 years. And so, tremendous excitement. Derek Queen's become a bit of a star this week. He's was on Pat McAfee. He was on CNN. I think he was on CBS. Like, the shot was the most exciting moment of the NCAA tournament so far, you know, in this particular March Madness. Derek Queen's shot, Maryland freshman, to beat Colorado State at the buzzer. Now, there was a story that really began a couple of days before that shot, that has now become the story, which has pushed Derek Queen's shot in Maryland's current, you know, placement in the tournament in the Sweet 16 to the background. It's hard to do when you're a fan base and you're in this bubble that I'm in with a lot of Maryland basketball fans, a lot that have jumped into the fray here recently, and it's like, wow, what a team. It's a really good team. This is really exciting. And yet, the game tonight is secondary to what's going on with the head coach. So let me give you all of the information on that. A week ago today, before they played their first round game against Grand Canyon University, Kevin Willard, in his press conference, was asked a question about the rumors swirling that he was a candidate for the job at Villanova. Villanova has a job opening. The guy that replaced Jay Wright, a legend, a two-time national championship winning coach at Villanova, was fired. Kyle Neptune. Didn't get it done after Jay Wright and Villanova, a pretty powerful basketball brand, a recent two-time national champion, a Big East member, was in the market for a new head basketball coach. Kevin Willard, who coached in the Big East for much of his life at Seton Hall, became a leading candidate. He was asked about it a week ago, and he took the opportunity to, for the lack of a better description, air some dirty laundry on the Maryland situation. So what is the Maryland situation? The Maryland situation is this. There's nobody that knows the situation that would tell you that what Kevin Willard said a week ago is anything other than true. That this has been a disconnect between the athletic department and multiple athletic directors and multiple head basketball coaches. Going back to Gary Williams when Debbie Yao was the athletic director. Kevin Anderson when Mark Turgeon was the athletic director. And Damon Evans, the most recent athletic director, and Mark Turgeon and now Kevin Willard. Maryland basketball is the most important sport for University of Maryland fans of sports teams. It's not football like it is at most of the schools in the Big Ten. It's basketball. It's men's basketball. It's always been that way. It is that way now. And it'll probably be that way in the future. Because, truthfully, one thing is true about Maryland sports. The men's football and basketball programs are different. Men's basketball, I think most people believe, can consistently be an upper-tier college basketball team that occasionally competes for a national championship. And most people don't believe that about football. You know, it doesn't matter. Mike Locksley had three really good seasons in a row. But they're in a league with Ohio State and Michigan and now USC and Oregon and Penn State, etc. And the belief is, and I'm not saying it's impossible now with a 12-team playoff that might go to more, that Maryland can't make a run and win 9 or 10 games one year and be a playoff team. I would love to see that. I'm a Maryland football fan, too. But I know the truth, and anybody that's been a Maryland fan of sports for as long as I have understands it's one of those unique circumstances in which basketball is more important than football. You know, you have schools like that, Indiana, Kentucky. You know, I'm talking about these schools that are in major football conferences, Big Ten, SEC. And Maryland is one of those schools, one of the few, where basketball is most important. And so last week, Kevin Willard went public with, you know, basketball just doesn't get as much of the emphasis in this university, in this athletic department as it should. Same complaints that Mark Turgeon had, same complaints that Gary Williams had. And people that are in the know for many years have said it's true. And now with Big Ten money, all driven by football primarily, and the TV contract that the Big Ten, you know, generates, and rev share now among universities, call it $20 million a year that they get from the Big Ten, you know, deal, you know, football dominates that revenue cut, that revenue split. Mike Locksley the other day said he doesn't have a problem. He's always had the resources, which is true. He also said he didn't think that it made sense to air, you know, inside, you know, laundry, which Kevin Willard did. It was certainly a slight, if not direct, shot at the current basketball coach. But what Kevin Willard said last week was true. He also went on and on about, you know, I'm trying to get us to the point where we can compete at the highest levels, implying that if the university got their act together, You know, and, you know, he got some of the things that he wanted, that he'd be there. He then came on this show on Tuesday, and I asked him, are you staying or are you leaving? And he danced around that a little bit, and then I said to him, I said, look, if you end up getting everything that you want to make Maryland basketball, you know, on par with the elite programs in the country, giving you the best chance to compete for a national championship, will you commit to staying next year and beyond? And he said yes to that. And now he's gone silent. Villanova's been silent. That is a big tell, is that Villanova's job has not been filled, and there don't appear to be any interviews scheduled. No one else has been mentioned. The other guy that had been mentioned, Richard Pitino, who was the head coach at New Mexico, took the Xavier job a few days ago. There's a lot of connecting of the dots that says Villanova's not saying anything. Kevin Willard went into deflection mode yesterday. We'll play some of that for you. It's actually kind of funny if it weren't so serious to a lot of people. And it certainly right now appears as if his next loss at Maryland will be his final game at Maryland. And so with that, I'll give you my, you know, kind of overarching thought. And it's two things which I believe are both true in this moment. Let me first say, to be clear, at this point, Denton, unless I've missed something, there's no definitive reporting that Kevin Willard is leaving and will accept a job at Villanova. Right? Did I miss anything in the last 30 minutes?
As of this moment, I am doom scrolling. There has been nothing on Twitter to suggest that he's
there's gone. A lot of suggestion of it. There's a lot of, you know, Chick, I saw Hernandez from Channel 9, said that Maryland's has directed its search firm that was out there searching for a new athletic director to also include in the search a basketball head coach for its men's basketball program. And there certainly appears to be right now an indication that he is going to go to Villanova. So for me, two things are true right now. One is this. He has the right to do whatever he wants to do. If he's not happy with, you know, the way things are for him at Maryland, if personally, you know, he wants to be in a different situation, his family wants to be in a different situation. You know, he's a Big East guy, coached in the Big East forever. He's a Jersey guy. Being back in Jersey or close enough to it might be more appealing to him. Being at a school that doesn't have big-time football may be super appealing to him, where all of the focus and all the significant portion of the revenue and big-time NIL money at Villanova goes to the basketball program. That is, without question, within the university, the number one sports priority. He has every right to do that. I understand he's got a contract that has 4 more years on it, but all of these coaches leave before their contracts are up. You know, they all have buyout clauses in the event that they end up pursuing or taking a job elsewhere. So if he ends up taking the Villanova job, Villanova will have to pay, will have to buy out Kevin Willard's contract. And that's a number that doesn't equal the number that he would have earned, but it's probably, I'm going to guess, in the $2 to $3 million range, maybe more than that. I could be wrong. But Villanova will have to pay something in terms of the buyout clause for Kevin to leave Maryland. So number one, in my opinion, he has the right to do this if he wants to do this, for whatever the reasons are. And those that are in the know and have been in the know for a while understand the frustrations of basketball coaches, plural, at Maryland for the men's basketball program. But number two, and this is also true, if he does leave after a week ago implying that if he got all these things, he would stay, after telling me the other day if he got all these things, he would stay, if he were to then leave with, let me just make sure I'm clear on this, with what I believe to be true, that the university has stepped up and made assurances to him and his agent that everything he wants, he's going to get. If he then leaves, There's no other way to describe it other than he will be, for Maryland sports fans, basketball fans, an all-time villain. He will be. He already is, without anybody knowing anything for sure. That's where it gets crazy, you know, in these social media bubbles that we all live in. I know some of you are not following it and don't know. Many people at the university don't know. The school president put out a teaser on Tuesday saying, big announcement coming yesterday. The announcement was that Kermit the Frog is going to be the commencement speaker for 2025. Jim Henson was a Maryland grad, the creator of the Muppets. Legendary Maryland grad. Kermit the Frog, he put that announcement out. The university did. You should see, if you haven't already, the responses to that. I would agree with most of you who say that is a bit tone deaf. But keep in mind, a lot of people at the campus, a lot of people that work at Maryland, teach at Maryland, they don't care about sports. They're working to make Maryland a great school, which they have done. Maryland is an exceptional academic institution. It is so much better today than it was when I was in school, or even anybody that was in school 15, 20 years ago. It's exceptional. They've done an incredible job. Moving to the Big Ten has been a net huge positive for the university. A lot of people that work in academia, they don't care. They're not following what's going on. You'd think the school president would know, though. And you'd think that the school president would have an idea that the basketball program, in many ways, may not be the front face of the university, but it's on the face somewhere. It may not be the biggest part of the face, but it's on there somewhere. I think two things are true. He has the right to do what he wants to do, but doing it this way subjects him to being an all-time villain. Now, that begs the question, is there any right way to go? Coaches go all the time. They leave programs all the time. We have three coaches in the tournament. Richard Pitino, the coach that Maryland just beat, Medved, at Colorado State. The guy at McNeese State, Will Wade, who's been crooked throughout his coaching career. All three of those programs knew their coaches were leaving even before they played games. Now, I don't think those jobs and those programs are at the Maryland level. But is there any way, right way to leave? I don't know that there is that would make people happy. But there is a difference between leaving after saying you'll stay if you get what you need and want and it's provided versus what he could have done if he knew he was leaving, which is just start saying a week ago, I'm dialed in on Grand Canyon. I'm not paying attention to whatever rumors are swirling out there. We've had a great season. I love my kids. I love this team. We are trying to make a big run in the NCAA tournament after finishing second in the Big Ten and winning 25 games. And we're dialed in on Grand Canyon. And after that game, if it was asked again, I don't even know what you're referring to, reports or whatever. I am totally focused on beating Colorado State. And then yesterday, what he did wasn't say, I'm just dialed in on beating Florida. He went the sarcastic route. I'll play that for you in a moment. But he could have just said, look, I'm not talking about any of that. Would that have made the reaction any different? It still would have been a very, very ugly response to him taking the Villanova job, if that's the way it goes. But I think ultimately, it would have been a different way to handle it, and for him, a better way to handle it. Yesterday, in the required press conference for the Sweet 16 teams in the West Regional in San Francisco, he was asked multiple times about this. Here's the first time he was asked, and you'll hear his answer.
You've been very open the last week about, you know, trying to get greater NIL share, revenue share. I'm sure you saw Mike Loxley yesterday said he would prefer to keep some of these issues in-house. Why have you felt like kind of bringing this discussion in the open has been the best way to advocate for your program?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I think our biggest thing is we got to stop Clayton. he's really good. He shoots the basketball going left 48%. He shoots it right going at like 38%. So really the last couple days, trying to come up with a game plan to stop, you know, Clayton, because I just think he's one of the best guards in the country that we've seen. And then really, you know, obviously trying to fix our rebounding woes have been at the top of my mind too. So yeah, it's a big problem.
I mean, everybody's reaction to that is different. It's funny, but at the same time, for we Maryland fans, it's a bit sort of too, sarcastic, given the gravity, you know, relatively speaking, of the situation, which if he leaves, it's not that funny. Again, you know, deflection in sort of a serious way and trying to take the best path towards an exit would have been asking me about the game. We're focused on trying to beat arguably the best team in the tournament. Ask me about, you know, Walter Clayton Jr. Ask me about our rebounding. That's what I've been dealing with all week. He was asked about it a little later on as well, and this was his answer.
Coach, you obviously went on the radio last night or yesterday and talked about kind of working with somebody in the athletic department. I just wanted to know if there were any updates that you had for us about it.
Yeah, we're playing Florida. It's a big matchup for us. Like, this is all about the Sweet 16 and these guys enjoying this as much as possible. I've enjoyed it tremendously. I do love this town. It's a great town. Great food. Got to have dinner with PJ Carlissimo last night, which is, I think, always a lot of fun. You know, the stories we get to tell about Seton Hall, and Chris Mullen joined us. Coach Van Gundy joined us. We had a great time last night.
So, Kevin, I've gotten to know him a little bit, does have a great sense of humor, very sarcastic sense of humor, and it was on display yesterday. But again, this is probably not the best course if ultimately he is leaving, in terms of how he will be viewed. A lot of these things will be remembered, and he will be, you know, upon his exit, if that's the way it goes, he'll be a villain. He probably would have been a villain regardless of the way he handled it. But there is a lot more to this. And again, let me emphasize, nobody is safe from criticism. Because this could have been handled long before it got to this point. By the athletic director, by the athletic department, he hasn't just started to express frustrations like the last coach and the coach before. And with that said, I don't know why they haven't asked Gary Williams to come in and be the interim AD in the moment. Gary is around. He's 80, basically going on 50. He is, you know, someone who's got the heart of the university. He's got the university in his heart, in his mind, in terms of what's best for it. He's the most qualified person associated with the university to deal with the current situation. And then if it escalates to needing a new head coach and a new AD, which we already are in the search for, please, somebody bring an adult who understands what that program needs and what the fan base is looking for to guide it through what are very choppy waters right now. Because if he leaves, it's destructive in the short term. I don't want to be hyperbolic and say that the program's devastated. Many people have said that. No. In today's day and age, with, you know, the portal and essentially one-year free agency, you know, you get a coach in here, next year is shot because Rodney Rice and Jacoby Gillespie end up being the starting backcourt for Villanova. But beyond that, you can turn it around in a year, especially if that coach gets what Kevin Willard and before him Mark Turgeon wanted, which is more support and in the era of NIL and rev share, even more dollars to pay players. So anyway, again, bit of a bubble. I understand this isn't for everybody. I do recognize that, but an incredible situation for a team in its first Sweet 16 in 9 years and to have this swirling around it in such a unique way. Not just, oh, by the way, he's been mentioned as a candidate for this job or that job, but the conversations that he's had and what's sort of been revealed for a lot of people that didn't know about sort of the inadequacies, if you will, of the relationship between the athletic department and the basketball program over a long period of time. With that said, weirdly, I'm still into the game tonight. I know a lot of you Maryland fans, it's just been totally, you know, tarnished, that it's hard for you to even focus on it. I can't wait to watch the game tonight. And I will have, by the way, a pick, a preview, and smell test picks on the Sweet 16 games tonight. Denton will have some picks as well. We'll talk some basketball on the show. But next, Bob Carpenter, longtime Nats voice on Masson, will join us as the Nats later on this afternoon open their 2025 season against the Phillies at Nats Park. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Mackenzie Gore against Wheeler today, opening day, Nats Park, 4:05 first pitch against the Phillies, and Bob Carpenter will start his final season as the lead voice of the Nationals on Masson. He joins us right now. What are you going to do this time next year? You just gonna you play a lot of golf?
I'm going to be listening to you on the radio, and it'll be the first time in about 20 years that you and I haven't visited on opening day. Kevin, I think you're the one guy who's called me every year on opening day, and it's become sort of a tradition for you and me. So I don't know. Maybe I'll have to tune in and see who you have on next year.
Well, I can still have you on next year. We can still talk, even though you're not calling the game. Yes, I have had you on every single year opening day, and I've had you on at other various times during the course of the year. And I find one of the reasons I love having you on is sometimes we end up talking about a lot more than just the Nationals. And I don't know that everybody knows this about you, but you were long established as an outstanding play-by-play voice in multiple sports before you came to Washington to start calling Nats games. And I'm wondering, over your 40-plus year career as a play-by-play announcer, why do you think, what's been the thing that has been most appealing about the way you've called games, in your opinion? I'm not asking you to self-promote, but there are a couple of things that I've always enjoyed about you, and I'm wondering if you have a sense of why you've been able to relate all of these years and do it well.
Well, my sister got a job with the Cardinals when I was 14 years old, so I got to hang around the ballpark. I had tickets. I used to go out in the lobby after the game just so I could see the players come up the stairs from downstairs and exit the ballpark. And so, you know, Kevin, I've been around professional athletes for a long time, and I think that maybe helped me have a sense of, hey, they're people too. They're not gods. You don't get on your knees and worship these guys. They're hardworking, talented young men. And I think maybe that's helped me over the years kind of have an even keel perspective on the different things I've done. And I always wanted to be a baseball announcer once I realized I was not going to be the next great left fielder for the Cardinals at 5'10 and 148 pounds with no power and a little bit of speed. And I always thought, wow, broadcasting would be that'd be a great next best thing. So I know that some producers at ESPN verbalized this to me over my 17 years there, that whatever the sport, they always knew they could trust me and they could count on me to be prepared. And I always wanted to be the best prepared guy out there, because I knew there were guys who had deeper voices and maybe more dynamic personalities than I had. But I always wanted to be the hardest working guy. And I think I told myself that way, way back when I was coming out of school, that maybe that was one way I could separate myself from the pack. And Kevin, it's just mind-boggling to me that I've gotten to do Division I basketball for 40 years. I did two World Cups, including five games here at RFK back in 94 when the city was on fire for soccer. And I'll tell you, when Italy played Mexico, this town was crazy for a couple of days. I'll never forget that. You know, and I got to do six or seven college football bowl games back when it meant something to do a bowl game, because there weren't that many, and some NCAA basketball tournaments, and obviously the baseball. So I grew up a well-rounded sports fan, not just one sport. I loved hockey. I was a teenager when the Blues were born in St. Louis, although I've only done a handful of minor league games way back when for my local cable system in Tulsa. So I just think maybe getting to know all different sports and approaching them with a good work ethic. And the other thing is, I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of students last night up at Joe Yashiroff's department up at the University of Maryland. And, you know, I told them the way you treat people on the way is important, too, because, Kevin, you know this. Kids who were production assistants and pulling cables when I started at ESPN in 1988, they're now producers and they're directors and they're executive producers. They, you know, they remember it if you treat them well. And I think it's a lesson for us, no matter what business we're in or what walk of life we're in, that, you know, the way you treat people, I think, helps you in the long run, too. Because if it comes down between you and another person, they might say, hey, that's a really good guy. Let's go for him.
So I wrote down a couple of things because if you didn't mention them, I was going to mention them. The first thing you said, and I wrote this down, I'm like, in listening to you call games, and I've told you this before, I can remember being in my, you know, apartment in College Park Towers on Hartwick Road, for those of you College Park people. I didn't live in the one on Knox. I lived in the one on Hartwick, watching ESPN college basketball games with Bob Carpenter on the call. That's when I was first introduced to Bob Carpenter. But over the years, you are always prepared, which obviously speaks to work ethic. I also think you've had a very conversational way about you in the way you've called games. And there's something you can't teach, and I think you'll understand what I'm saying. Some people are likable and some aren't, and I think you've had that ability for to be very likable over the years. And part of that is your conversational approach, style to it. But you're going to be missed, and you got one more year. We'll have plenty of times to have these discussions, including maybe before your final call. But I was thinking about having this conversation with you, and those were the things that I wrote down in terms of why you've been, you know, had the run you've had.
Well, I appreciate that, Kevin. That's very nice of you. And here's another thing, you know, it's not that hard to be nice to everybody. And some days are better than others. You know, some days I'm in a better mood than other days, as we all are. And this crossed my mind a number of years ago when I was getting out of the my car at the ballpark one day. You know, some things were going on, and it just wasn't one of those great days. But I'm doing a major league ball game that night. So when I got out of the car, I kind of kicked myself, not literally, in the rear end. But I said to myself, you know what? Right now you're getting out of your car in Lot A at Nationals Park. There are 100 young people out there who are getting out of their cars at minor league ballparks, college ballparks, high school ballparks, JUCO ballparks. Some of them are just PA announcers getting out of their cars, and they're excited about the game they're going to. Don't you dare ever take for granted what you have, because there are a lot of people out there who would trade, you know, anything to do 1 year of Major League Baseball, and here I am at 4 o'clock today about to embark on my 42nd year. It boggles my mind. I have no idea why I've been so fortunate. You know, some of the stuff we talked about before. But, you know, Kev, in this business, and I've seen this with a lot of guys who are really, really talented, it is so easy to get wrapped up in yourself. And I think our Nationals fans know, for me, yeah, it's about working with Franny. It's about working with Dan, you know, and being around the guys and all that. But I'm not a guy who tries to hang around the clubhouse all the time and be buddy-buddy with all the players. I love those guys, you know, but they have their own little inner sanctum there. And I'm not a guy who goes and sits in the manager's office for 30 or 45 minutes every day. My number one obligation when I go on the air is to make our fans feel good about being a Washington Nationals fan. And some night when we have a walk-off homer, it's pretty easy to do that. Other times when you're getting your brains beat out 8-0 in the fourth inning, that's when you find out if you can pull this off. So my number one priority is always how we are relating to our fans, and nothing in the next 6 months is going to change that for me.
You know, part of what you said reminds me of something that my father told me: treat normal people like superstars and superstars like normal people. And it sounds like that is been part of your MO over the years. All right, let's talk
about... And one more thing, Kevin.
Yeah.
My dad, he was a coal miner when he was a young man, and he and my mom, his would-be wife, were dating. And my mom told him, she said, I'm not marrying you until you get out of the coal mines. So he went and trained himself to be a welder, and he worked on barges and towboats for 40 years on the Mississippi River in South St. Louis. two summers of college, he made me put on the hard hat, the steel-toed shoes, the long blue work shirt, the blue jeans and everything, working in St. Louis summers down at that shipyard. I never, ever wanted to go back to school so bad in my life. You know, in some instances, I wanted summer to be over so I could go back to school. But my point is that instilled a work ethic in me.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe someone of privilege hasn't, you know, experienced that the way they grew up. But, you know, we grew up with what I would consider lower middle class in a working person's neighborhood. And, you know, we play ball morning, noon, and night. The toughest part of the day was mom calling us in to quit playing ball and come in for dinner. And, you know, those values my dad instilled in me long, long ago have stayed with me to this day.
We're talking to longtime Nats voice on Masson, play-by-play voice and face, Bob Carpenter. All right, let's talk a little baseball. What needs to go right for this team to, let's just say, on September 1st, be legitimately in a wild card race?
Young pitching, followed by young pitching. Because I think CJ and James Wood and Dylan Cruz and Luis Garcia, hopefully Kay Barrett, you know, shows us what he can do. And then you got the veterans mixed in. You know, I think the team offensively will be better than last year. We were second from last in home runs to the White Sox in all of baseball. Not that home runs are everything, because to me, I abide by the old Tony La Russa axiom that extra base hits, whatever they are the important thing. And doubles are one of the most important things in baseball. If you have a team that can drive the ball, doubles, triples here and there with the speed guys, and, you know, some home runs, you got a chance. And, you know, the Nats, I think, scored the fewest runs other than Miami in the National League, and the Marlins have their own set of problems. So I think the offense is definitely going to be better. The defense has to be better, Kevin. Second worst to Miami in the National League last year. And the first half of the season seemed to be acceptable, but then after that, there were just some defensive things that did not go well. But these young pitchers, did a couple of them sneak up on people last year? Are they for real? Those are the questions we have to ask. And so, you know, McKenzie gets the call today. He's got to be the leader. He's a young veteran guy now. You know, still a young kid, still a pup. But, he's got some veteran traits to him. Jake Irvin on Saturday, you know, and then you've got Mitchell Parker and Michael Soroka, who I visited with in Florida last week, so impressed with him. And Trevor Williams, we'll see what he contributes, and he's going to be a guy who's a leader, too. It's just really, really sad that DJ Hers is not able to answer the call here because he might have completed that young bunch. And then the bullpen, I think, is going to be great. I told Kyle Finnegan, I am the happiest guy in D.C. that you are back because I don't like calling blown saves in the top or the bottom of the ninth inning. And hopefully the bullpen will be good, some really good arms out there. But, you know, Kevin, it's going to boil down to the young pitching, airtight defense, and if you can do that, you can win games. Because Whitey Herzog used to say, I can wait for offense. I cannot wait for defense. It's got to be there every day. And when you have a young pitching staff, you better play good defense.
Are you confident that Mackenzie Gore is on the verge or is capable of becoming a true ace?
I think he's got that capability. I listen closely to the baseball people. I believe them before I believe myself because they're the experts. And when they tell me the electric stuff this kid has and catchers who have caught him and, you know, hitters and sim games and, you know, live BP and stuff like that who've had to step in against him. I mean, when those guys say things, you listen to it, and his stuff is serious. And I just think he needs to get over that, maybe that little mental hump. Maybe it's not a little one. It's still, you know, maybe a big thing for him. Don't let a walk, don't let an error behind you, you know, make your inning fall apart. And when he figures it out, you know, he's going to be really, really good. Bob Gibson once told me, when you're a young pitcher, you know where you want the ball to go. You just don't know how to get it to go there until you've been around the block a few times. And if a guy like Bob Gibson struggled with control, as did Nolan Ryan and some other young guys early in their career, not comparing McKenzie to Hall of Famers at this point, but he's a young guy with a ton of potential, and when he gets his command, look out.
If I told you that we were having a conversation in October and the Nats had a much better season offensively than maybe most predicted, where did it come from?
Well, it's going to come from James Wood. It's going to come from CJ getting on base, Jacob Young with his speed getting on base. You know, his defense, unquestioned, it's going to be great. And then, you know, James Wood, I mean, you put a kid like that who's still basically nearly a rookie in the number three hole, that's a pretty big deal. And then veteran leadership, and we got to have pop from Josh Bell. So glad that Josh is back here. Nathaniel Lowe, you know, we need him to do what he did with the Rangers 2 years ago. And, you know, then you know, you sprinkle in some of those guys. So, but it's going to be the young guys. And the young guys who can run, getting on base, Dylan Cruz is a key part of that, and then let some of those big boppers drive them in. And I'm not so sure that at some point this season we won't see Robert Hassel III coming off a great spring. But, you know, young guys with speed, getting on base, veterans who know how to do that, driving in runs. Because I remember Tony Perez when he was part of that big red machine. He said, I have one job, and that's to drive in runs. I don't care what my batting average is, home runs, whatever. My number one job is to drive in runs, and that's what those veteran guys have to do.
Bob, as always, thanks so much. Enjoy today. I'm sure we'll talk again soon. On the call today at 4:05, Gore and Wheeler. Appreciate it, as always.
Thanks, buddy. And if I'm not on a tee box or a green somewhere on this day next year, we'll do it again if you want to.
We will do it again. But if you are, I will totally understand. And we can record it the night before.
Okay.
Thanks, Bob.
Sounds good. All
appreciate
right, buddy.
It.
Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Bob Carpenter, everybody. The Nats, 71-91 a year ago. And they're over under on wins this year, right in that same ballpark. We'll see. They need, as he mentioned, a lot of the pitching to come through, a lot of the bullpen to come through, but they need more scoring for sure as well. James Wood, Dylan Cruz, Jacob Young, etc. CJ, you know, potentially a 30 home run guy. Wood, 25 plus. They're going to need a lot of that. It would be nice to have a competitive team into the latter months of the summer, heading into the fall for the first time in a while. All right, we will get back to Maryland. We will talk some hoops, not just coaching situation. Give you guys a chance to weigh in on the Maryland situation as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.